Hi, welcome. If you read my show page, you know that my guest Sherry Wild has been a UFO abductee. Sherry was not only given an inside view of spaceships, but to this day she continues to have communications with ETs, who she calls quote unquote my guys. Sherry was a 37-year-old ordinary Midwestern housewife, mother, and real estate broker when she began to remember occurrences in her life that started when she was 5 years old that led her to understand the understanding of having been abducted by ETs for literally most of her life at that time. In her book titled The Forgotten Promise, she describes how she wished she could have been diagnosed as insane as opposed to having actually gone through what she was recalling and thereby avoid being subjected to the indignation of being ostracized by her family members and friends and labeled an oddball and even worse, someone who was suspect of conjuring up stories for attention. Sherry has been a friend of mine for more than 13 years. We communicate often and have visited each other's homes. We met at the Miraval in Tucson, Arizona in 2002, where I was commissioned to give a lecture on numerology. Sherry was one of those who came to my lecture. I gave Sherry a mini reading and learned that she was born on a 7 day with a 7 destiny. More on that on a later show. After rereading Sherry's book over the weekend, I found that throughout the first 100 pages, she expressed things about herself that correlated with the personality qualities of a 7, those of being a very private and dignified person and someone who would never ordinarily allow unwanted attention foisted upon her. I know Sherry to be a pragmatic, down-to-earth, responsible, stable, and spiritually oriented person. She has taught classes in A Course in Miracles and has been involved in the higher consciousness movement for many years. My first question to Sherry is, so what do you mean by my guys?
Hey, Sally. Hi, first of all.
Hi.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you. What do I mean by my guys? You know, I don't know where that came from. It just seems so natural for me to call them my guys. When they come for me, when they've come for me all my life, there's always one main guy who I gave him the name of Da, D-A, Da. I think that goes back to when I was a little girl and he was like a father to me. So I call him Da, but he's never alone. And sometimes he's not even with them when they come back in the days when they used to come and drag me out of bed. Sometimes he was not even there with them. The little worker guys would come instead. So I just call them guys. They don't have names. They don't have names. And they just...
So how do they communicate with you? I mean, is it telepathically?
It is telepathic, but there's a couple different forms of communication. With Da, when I'm with him, directly with him, and he's right in front of me, he's talking to me, but his mouth is not moving, but I hear him audibly. I swear that I'm hearing, you know, I hear the tone of his voice. I hear him speaking to me. But if you look at his face, there's no movement with his mouth. His voice is very familiar to me. Then there's the way they talk to me. They communicate. I call it as like there's a tube that opens up above my head. And I actually hear him like speak down into my head. And I hear his voice inside of my head. And then a third way they talk to me is what I call a push. And that comes in a couple different forms. You just have a knowingness of what they're conveying to you, and it's kind of like a download. And it's like you remember a conversation with them and you remember it word for word, or you just have a push, a knowingness about something you're supposed to do or someplace where you're supposed to go. And it's hard to tell. It's more than intuition. It's very, very strong, and you can't deny it. You're just basically pushed to do something or go somewhere or know something. So I consider that a form of communication from them.
Okay.
So
and
I still have.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I have that to this day, that kind of communication with them.
Okay. And you say that you see Da, you know, you physically see him, or I mean, you see an imagery, or how is that go?
No, I've seen him. When they investigated my case, they being the Center for UFO Studies out of Chicago, when there was a UFO flap in my community, that's how I awakened to these experiences in 1989. and the Center for UFO Studies came to my community and investigated the things that were going on in my life, and they determined that it was a real physical experience, which by the time they gave me that, the investigation went on for over a year, probably about a year and a half, and by the time they told me that, I was pretty well resolved to that awareness, because you have bruises on your arm, and you see where they had the ship sitting on the field next to my house. I had lots of marks on my body, not to mention just the clear memories of having been with them.
But I just wondered if you still have those marks.
What I have most recently are, they're doing some modalities with my body. So sometimes I have injection sites on my body, and when I ask, "What are you injecting into me?" I do get an answer. They speak to me. You know,
I mean,
it's a strange thing.
Things like that done?
Yeah, as recent as this last year, yes. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's interesting. I would like to have communication be more on my terms, but it's like they decide when they're going to talk to me. But I can ask any question I want, like when the book was going to print, and my publisher wanted to know, he had a question. He said, in the book, Da tells me at one time that he's from Andromeda, but I describe him as looking like a gray, which means he's from, I guess that means he's a Zeta. I didn't know anything about that. And my publisher said, that doesn't make sense. If he's from Andromeda, he shouldn't be a gray. And I said, well, I don't know. I only know what I know. And he said, well, find out. And I said, how am I supposed to find out? And he said, ask him. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll ask. But I was really surprised when I asked, and then that's when I realized I was getting answers to things. And I asked the question, apparently, and the answer came to me, and I recalled a conversation that I had with Da, and I recalled it word for word. And it's, you know, it's, you know that it's, for me, I know it's real when it's something that I can't make up. And a lot of times he uses words and phrases that I don't use. So, for instance, in this case, when I was in the shower, which is very, very typical, in the shower, and that's when I all of a sudden I heard myself talking with Don. I heard myself say, so my publisher wants to know, are you a Zeta? And I see Da. I literally, it's like replaying in my head, and I see him look at me and kind of tilts his head, and I say, are you a gray? And he goes, that would not best describe the truth of who I am. See, that's how he talks. I don't talk like that. And I said, well, then what are you? And he said, I am what you would call an etheric being. I don't have a solid body. And I said, yeah, but you have a body. When I see you, you have a body and you look like a gray. And he said, that is a container. That is a container. That is what I wear when I come into your density, because I have work to do. So I need a physical body so that I can do the work that I need to do while on your world. And I said, oh, okay, interesting. And yeah. I said, okay. So, well, now here's the good part. Because then I say, well, then who are you? Where are you from? And this is the part that got me, because he looked at me with those black eyes and he just kind of cocked his head and he goes, I am what you would call a traveler, a voyager of the universe, going where needed in service to the creator. And I was like, whoa. See, I can't make that up.
Kind of like an alien. Would that, I mean, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So,
why you? Why do you think? I mean, is there any reasoning behind, or do you have any understanding why you were chosen? I mean, when I was reading the book, I thought, my God, this woman is actually an ET herself because of the way you were born and the difficulty of your mother where she didn't have a clue why she was pregnant with you and so on. So that was very interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, why me? They didn't choose me. I chose them, I guess you'd say. Well, we chose each other because we all come onto the planet. We all have a path. We have a destiny. We have a reason for being here. And my reason for being here was to volunteer to be of service during this time on the planet when she was moving toward ascension. So my my first act of volunteering was to come in and be in the hybrid program. So I participated in the hybrid program, and that's why I had so many visits from them and continual visits. They started when I was a little child, tweaking my body and doing what they could to keep my body healthy. And then as I got older, they harvested my eggs, you know, a lot. And I participated in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, so, with your own children, there's the possibility of some manipulation there too. I mean, I hate to bring that up because I know you have problems with your daughters and so on in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Right. There was manipulation with my oldest daughter. They called it, when I got so upset with them, they didn't understand why I was upset. And I said, because you messed with my pregnancy, you manipulated, or I used that word, I think. And he said, no, we enhanced. We enhanced certain characteristics. And he made it sound like it was a good thing. But as far as the eggs they harvested from me, most are still in storage, but I have, I think it's 47 children who are, you know, they're adults now. And they're hybrid children, mostly adults.
Here on the planet, are they hybrids to be in existence here on our planet, or
a lot of them are human to human, but they do enhance. So they use, you know, human to human. The reason that I volunteered to be in that program was because at the time that I volunteered in the linear year 1947 is when I volunteered. That's about when Gaia, the plan was put into place to flood the planet with lots of souls from higher dimensions, because the bomb had been detonated in 45, and so Gaia was going to move on and continue on her ascension. And at that time, hardly any of the souls on planet Earth were going to be able to survive that ascension. So the souls were going to be lost, and that was going to be a very sad and tragic thing.
That's why they're here. That's why they're here, too. I mean, that's why they come to, and they must come to other people besides you. And you know some of these people because now you have gone to different UFO gatherings and so on. I mean, of people that have the same type of experience as you. Is that correct?
Right. And Say that again.
How many would you say that there are that you have encountered?
I've encountered a lot of younger, like second and third wave volunteers. I can pick up on their energy, and sometimes they recognize me because I worked with the children so much on the ships. So a lot of young people that I meet will recognize me a lot of times physically, but sometimes just energetically. I recognize their energy more than anything. So I can pick up like a Pleiadian. You know, I can always tell a Pleiadian from their energy. And there's a lot of them that are incarnated on the planet or just on the planet at this time to help with the frequency.
Now, I kind of segue a bit, but that's another thing that I was curious about in reading your book. When you said you went onto the spaceship and you saw that there were books and something that looked like a computer, and I thought to myself, come on. I mean, you know... My concept is that, you know, somebody coming from another galaxy or another universe or something, I mean, aren't they going to have something else they use besides what we use here on Earth, you know, to...
Well, when I saw the computer, it was 1960, what would that have been, 68, I think it was, and I had never seen a computer then, and it was small, like what we've got now, the PCs that we have now. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a TV, but I knew enough to call it a monitor of some sort because it clearly wasn't a TV, and it very much looked like what we have. I mean, it had a little keyboard thing or something that he was touching with his hands. Above it were shelves, and there were what appeared to be, I wouldn't call them books so much as I would call them one of those things that we use in school that snaps. Huh?
DVD?
Binders. They looked. It reminded me of like binders.
Yeah. So now another thing is, you talked about being programmed, And, you know, when I met you, I really did feel that there was an energy of you that I mean, you were so odd to me in certain ways, you know, but I really liked you. But there were things that I just thought, God, this woman, I think she's been injected or something, you know, because I like to believe before I doubt, you know. I mean, I'm somebody that feels like everything is possible, or anything is possible, let's say. And I'm called gullible many times. But, you know, in knowing you and knowing you over the years and meeting with you at your own home and seeing your business and all of that kind of thing, I know what a pragmatic person you are, and you're also a Capricorn. No Capricorn's going to want this kind of attention brought to them either, you know. So not only the double sevens, but the Capricorn. So I had to become quite a believer, and but it's still so out of my realm, and most anybody that I know, our realm of identification, that almost everything you say is like, you know, is a, you know, kind of out of the movies or something, you know. So
I know it's true, and I understand that. And sometimes I forget how strange I am or how different I am. And that's why it's good. I'm in a relationship with somebody who my guys really pushed very, very hard, or they insisted that I be with this person at this time. And they've always been in control of my personal relationships ever since my divorce, you know, many years ago. And they've guided those relationships. And now I'm with somebody who grounds me a lot. And he does it in a humorous way and in a sweet way, but very strongly, because I don't know that I'm different, I guess. I don't know that I have different ways of looking at things. And I came in with these certain beliefs and knowing this. It's not stuff that even that my guys have taught me so much as it's just a remembrance on my part. And the more that I've awakened, the more it comes too.
I don't know whether you don't want to go there, but like what you have discussed with me about the sexual, if you want, pull that you have, or draw or magnetism, because you did, you know, I mean, I witnessed it, you know, and I thought that was part of what just made me think, God, I don't know, maybe they've done something that, you know, makes her some kind of a magnet. For men, it just didn't matter where you took yourself. But you were telling me that even you went with your you're a beautiful woman, but when you went with your beautiful friends, that you would always end up with a guy. In some cases, they wouldn't.
Well, I would put it this way. I would say that when I was out with some beautiful, lovely ladies, and we would be out, they would comment a lot of times, how come I got, you know, would get the attention and stuff. So I think that there was an energy about me, but that goes back to the deal that I made when I decided to stay for a second round. I was supposed to leave in 1991 or 1990, because I was done with my part in the hybrid program, pretty much. And so my divorce was coming, I was getting divorced, and pretty much I was meant to leave, and I couldn't go at that time. It's not in the book. This part is not in the book. And so as part of the deal that I cut to stay was that I would explore this strange thing on planet Earth that they call love. And it certainly was an interesting journey that I took, because I did have, I've been single most of my adult life, and I've had a series of relationships. You know, I had a 10-year relationship with someone I was engaged to, and then I had a couple 3-year relationships. Each one I learned so much about this thing of love on this planet, you know, what you call love, and how it's really a form of kind of ownership and control, and it involves a lot of emotions and roller coaster ride. It was really interesting, and I finally caught on to what was going on with me after when I would leave these wonderful men that I was involved with, and I loved them, and I still love each and every one of them to death, and I didn't stay with any of them. I would find myself leaving them, even though I loved them. And I couldn't figure out, and it was explained to me not that long ago that was the deal. They explained it to me when the book is called The Forgotten Promise, and it's called The Forgotten Promise because I was not going to allow the book to be published. And I was going to pull the plug on it because my youngest daughter was going to disown me and had told me that if the book went to print, she would not talk to me again. And we had just reconciled. And I, as you know, I lost my oldest daughter now almost 6 years ago, and I didn't want to lose I lost her to estrangement. And so I said, I'm not doing this. And Da came that night and explained to me that I had made a promise. And, his very words to me were, Sherry, have you forgotten the promise you made? And I said, I don't care. I'm not doing this. And he said, you took a vow. And I said, I still don't care. You're asking too much, and I'm not going to lose my youngest daughter. But he showed me that night that the coming apart between myself and my daughters is a necessary part of what needed to play out. I was meant to leave when they were still fairly young. They were teenagers. I was meant to die in 1990 or 91, somewhere in through there. And because I didn't do that.
The car accident. Huh? In the car accident, yeah. Which you sort of, right. That was a miracle kind of thing that happened.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when I was supposed to check out. But I wouldn't, I changed my contract. And, I had to argue in front of the council to change my contract. And that was the deal I cut. They finally relented. And I remember it now. I mean, I was remembering it as I was writing the book, but I didn't know how it all came together. And it wasn't until that night when he came into my bedroom and talked to me. And he showed me, they do that download. They just drop it into my head. And he showed me. And so I had to have this parting. There's something about the dynamics of my, leaving my children's lives. So giving them the opportunity to find their own strengths in their own way. And so we had to have that had to happen in some manner with both of them, at least for some time. So that's what's going on. It made it easier for me. So then I did move ahead with having the book published. And my daughter.
Here's one of the things that I feel, if I were listening to this and had never heard of this before in my life, I would wonder, well, okay, so you go in and meet with this council, which seems so really weird. And so it's like, how did you recall that? Because I know in your book, you do explain how you were taken back into regression. And also, mm-hmm. I don't know whether it was hypnosis. I think it was more regressions that you had so that you began to remember and recall with clarity things that had happened to you. But are you saying when you met with the council at that time that you really were aware that you were meeting the council?
I did. I actually talked to Don about it. Don Schmidt was the investigator. At the time it happened was during the investigation of me. They were still
And who still is having, Don Schmidt?
He was the co-director of the Center for UFO Studies. He took over after J. Allen Hynek passed away, and he's the one who investigated me. He's since gone on to be a best-selling author. He's an expert on Roswell and Area 51. He's an excellent investigator, very, very good. So I talked to him about it soon after I had that experience. The way it happened was in my living room. They came to me, the council came to me, and I remembered, and I was so puzzled by it, but I had all this strange stuff going on, and I remember telling Don that I had the weirdest experience. I was exhausted from the abductions. They were coming, many, many times, sometimes during the week, three and four, sometimes twice a day, and so I would go home every afternoon and try to sleep and for an hour or so because I wasn't sleeping much. My husband at that time had left me already. I was home and I saw myself get up and stand in the living room, and I saw my body still lying on the sofa. And I had had out-of-body experiences before, so that I didn't find that real startling. What was startling to me were that I saw these other people in the room. They were all etheric beings. I looked at myself and I knew I was in my etheric body. And it didn't seem all that odd to me at the time it was happening. And what we did is they held a meeting, and I was told that it was time for me to go, and that I needed to come back on the ship is actually what they said, and work from that side. And I argued my case, and I'll never forget it was very real. And Don was very interested in it. I felt like a fool telling him about it, because it didn't seem to fit into the UFO thing, the abduction thing. But he knew more than I did at the time, and he kind of had an idea what was going on. But yeah, I remember it consciously.
Well, and now you've come to accept this so much more even than when I met you. But back through your book, oh my God, it's like such an ordeal. I mean, it just never stopped. And it was just like, how could you even maintain your sanity, you know, at all? I mean, it just seemed to me like, my God, here's another page of just wrenching stuff, you know, to get through for who you were and what you felt you wanted to be in this world, you know. And you had all these things going on and that you were learning and remembering. And my gosh, it was horrific in there.
I didn't hold any of it back. And I met with Don, and, you know, the book just came through me, and it just seemed to come through me. But I remember Don saying to me, because I told him that I was thinking about writing the book, and then I didn't, you know, I did the research, and then I was like, it's like it came to my senses, and I was like, what am I talking about writing a book? I'm not going to write a book. But I did the research, and so I had it, so that when they started writing the book through me, it was all there. But I remember Don saying to me, he said, don't hold back, Sherry. Don't hold back what this was like for you. He said, I watched you. I saw what you went through. He said, don't you dare sugarcoat it. He said,
he saw what you went through because he watched you when you were going through not hypnosis, but the regression, right? He was present.
He was there for that, but he investigated me, and he met me when I was kind of cocky about the whole UFO thing and kind of smart ass about it and didn't believe in it and couldn't figure out why he would, because he seemed intelligent. He saw me be a very pragmatic, down-to-earth, three-dimensional person. And he had a pretty good sense of what had happened to me, but he wasn't sure. He was hoping that it was something other than an abduction, because he knew what was in store for me. He knew what it was going to do to me to have to face that. And he watched my world blow up. He was there and saw what it did to me. I mean, I walked into his office and with him into Stanley Mitchell's office, a very successful, at a young age, successful and confident young mother and wife. And
very, you know, excuse me for interrupting, but when I met you, you could have been totally intimidating to most men. You were good looking. You owned a Mercedes and a Porsche, and you had your own, you know, land development business. My God, woman, you know, wow. Talk about confident, you know.
Yes, I should have known this would be like this. But so I was, even at that age, I've always been just sure of who I am, you know. I mean, I'm not, it's not arrogance. Don't mistake it for arrogance. It's just a self-assuredness that I had. But, you know, that got pulled out from under me when I underwent hypnosis, and when I was forced, even after hypnosis, I refused to accept it, and I kept trying to find holes in it. And so Don told me, he said, don't you dare hold back. He said, people, they don't have any idea. They need to know just what a hell this is for you to go through. They need to know that, you know, your life is, as you knew it, was over, and you could never go back to it. So I didn't hold back, but I don't think I was, you know, the guys who were kind of running this through me, you know, they didn't hold back. They're the ones who really kind of wrote the book through me. I mean, I certainly had some control of it, but it just, I gave birth to it. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, it was in some ways, it was kind of exhausting to read, you know, because it was just like, come on, let's have a little lightness here. But anyway,
I'm bound to sell a lot of books from that comment.
Oh, well, no, I'm sorry. But I mean, it's very interesting. It holds your interest, and it's very easy reading, actually.
Very easy.
It reads very well. And I just think, you know, I try to look at it with skepticism, you know, because, again, I don't have any connection with anything like that. And, you know, so many people, they always wonder, why is someone chosen? You know, why would you be chosen to be this? And yet I think you've kind of explained that to us already. I thought maybe because people are just more beautiful or something, and they look down on the planet and think, ooh, there's a pretty one. Let's get her. You know, or I don't know. But that's just my own way of looking at things. But anyway, I feel so much for you with the way your parents were reacted to it for you, even though your father was someone who was very interested in UFOs. Because, oh, the other thing I wanted to ask was about there in Wyoming, Wisconsin, how you had so many sightings over and over, even where the people in your community would gather together, right, in like Grange Halls or something like that, and talk about those things.
Well, we had a flap, and it was a hotbed of activity in 88, 89, right into there. So during that time, what I've since discovered is that I had, during the harmonic convergence in August of 87, is when I didn't go into work for a couple of days. I remember very clearly. I didn't know at the time that it was the harmonic convergence. I didn't put any of it together till, again, just recently, it was downloaded or shown to me that basically I got my marching orders at that time. And then that was when I was going to start having awakening, having the experiences, and going to work at what I came here to do, the second phase of my mission, I guess. So we have had a lot of sightings in Wisconsin. I had a lot of activity here. Anybody who's been close to me has seen ships, and the guys have shown themselves to probably around 16 or 17 of my closest of people who are close to me and people who know me. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your book now, I mean, I find it to give you some major credibility that these Hollywood producers are wanting to create a movie out of what you have written, right? Out of your life story.
Right. They optioned the book almost immediately. It was interesting how they came to have it. They're out in Hollywood, and they're A Course in Miracles people. And they were in the middle of doing a movie already, a sci-fi movie, but they said they wanted to do a serious movie about the phenomenon of the abduction or the encounters. And a friend of theirs who's part of their A Course in Miracles group, and his name you would probably recognize if I were to say it, but I'm not going to, he rang their doorbell one Sunday morning, I guess, and he just put my book in their hands and said, here's your next movie. And they took it and they said, huh. And Jerry told me they read it, he and Rochelle, they're a couple, and they read it out loud to each other. And Jerry said that Rochelle cried, but he said, for myself, he said, I bawled all the way through it. He said, I cried all the way through it. He said, we were more than halfway through when all of a sudden I stopped. And I said, wait a minute. She's talking about the Course in Miracles. You know, this is like the teachings of the Course in Miracles. And so they were very drawn to it because they love the Course. And so they're going to make the movie and stay on honestly with the storyline and honest about the lesson, and they're not going to make it into a sci-fi movie, but they're going to put some killer special effects in it.
So it's going to be kind of a documentary then?
No, I don't think so. I think they want it to be entertaining. I mean, It's still up in the air. It goes very slowly. They're writing the script now, but there was some talk about doing a Netflix series, and I told them there's probably enough to do a Netflix series. But they are leaning toward a movie. They've got, you know, they're getting all their ducks in a row, and, you know, the script is being written now. It's the second script, actually, they're working on now. They're coming here in about 2 weeks. They're going to spend the weekend with me and scout out some of the locations. So it's exciting.
So I just was thinking about how interesting, you know, how we have coincidences these days and so on, and 77s, you know, as I said at the beginning of the program, that you were born on a 7 day with a 7 destiny, and the destiny number is just simply the full addition of the birthday reduced to a single digit. And 77s are fairly rare. I mean, I don't find a lot of them. However, in the last week, I've had like 3 different ones. Just on Thursday, I went to get a new iPhone, and the guy was just, I just stood there. I was there for 2.5 hours, and And I thought, this guy's got to have a seven someplace. So then I asked him a little later, because I told him I was a numerologist, and he was born on the 25th of April with a seven destiny. And then there was this woman who came over, and she wanted to help us, because I'm like, you know, I couldn't figure out how to do all of the different things that you had to do to transfer my information and so on. And so then I wanted to give her some kind of gift, and I have this Cosmic Mates app, you know. So I said, look, I'm going to bring this up and put your name in there and just learn something about yourself. So she puts her name and birth date in there, and she's double sevens. And, oh, anyway, there were just a number. I got a physical trainer, and she's double sevens, and that was just a couple of weeks ago. So it's just like they're coming in at me, you know. And Tom Doyle, who's going to be doing the music at the beginning and end of my program, you know, that's a really incredibly interesting story, how I ran into him here in San Francisco, and I only knew one person in Wisconsin where he had grown up. And then I told him, well, this woman she's double sevens like you. And I said, she was a woman who's been taken up in UFOs. And then he says to me, her name doesn't happen to be Sherry, does it? And so he took you. I thought that was pretty unique.
He's been to my house, right? Yeah, I think he's been to my house. Yeah, uh-huh. I know him. So, yeah, well, when I met you and you found out I was double sevens when you went around the room that day at Miraval, and you discovered I was a double seven, you looked at me and you said, I'll bet you've been on a UFO or something, haven't you? Or something along those lines. And I thought, oh, how would she know that? I was like, oh.
Well, the other reason was because I had a double seven guy come to me at the East West Bookshop where I used to work. And he'd called me up for an appointment, and he actually was a doctor. He was a psychiatrist or psychologist for children. And he told me that he wanted to have a reading. So he comes in, and then he tells me when he's meeting with me, he said, I didn't really come here to ask to get a reading. He said, what I really wanted was to ask you how I should prepare to go meet with extraterrestrials. He said, I have paid $4,500 to go meet with some extraterrestrials on a plateau in North Dakota, and I was hoping you could tell me how to prepare. And I said, and he was double sevens. I said, well, you know what? I'm like a numerologist here. I'm not an ET, okay? But I said, I know one thing. If anybody was going to come in and ask me that question, it'd be somebody with your numbers. That's for sure. So when I saw your numbers, and it hadn't been too long ago since I'd had that guy in my place, but double sevens are the most unique and unusual people. I mean, we have Elon Musk. Larry Ellison, I think he's probably pretty unique too. Sandberg, the woman that's the president of Facebook. There is also Beethoven, Chopin, Gauguin, Liberace, Madonna. You know, there's all of these people, very unique and unusual people, actually. So it's my favorite number. I shouldn't really say that out loud, but it truly is, because they're such unique and unusual individuals that pack that. Johnny Depp, he's another one. I just happen to like him. Mm-hmm. So
I do too.
So anyway, I don't know here now. Do you want to take a break or anything?
Me? No.
Yeah. Okay, go forward. Go forward with, give us a little more information about where you plan to go in the future with this. And how long are you staying?
How long am I staying?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. Those who follow me follow my blog and such, know that I've been dealing lately with poison. And so there was for a while a plan for me to exit in September of this year. And I think I talked to you even, Sally. We were having a conversation and I asked you if I had an exit point this year. And you confirmed that I did. And I just...
Well, I confirmed... Wait a minute. I cannot necessarily definitively tell people that.
Right.
I mean, right. I know that there are certain numbers that can indicate that, but
yeah, or a transition, yeah.
Okay, so, a transition, yes, absolutely. I can do that. Yeah. But also I wanted to ask about the Men in Black and also this poisoning. I think that's a very interesting aspect of this too, because I remember when you called me and told me that you had Parkinson's disease. And I thought, wow. It was just so like weird to me. And then, you know, I think you since learned that that was not correct and that you were actually poisoned.
It's poison, yeah. Yeah. And so the symptoms are similar, and they're not sure if the shaky weakness will go away once the poison is out of my system. They seem to think that it could. But Parkinson's is a disease that doesn't always have actual things, something you can look at under a microscope either and say, oh, there's a Parkinson's cell, you know, like you can cancer. So I don't know, it's all still up in the air, but I know that as I'm going through these healing modalities and I'm getting a lot of healing assistance from a lot of different levels and realms, a lot of people
that's
on this
what
planet.
I wonder is why would, I mean, you know, if, I mean, it seems to me that you would have a lot of power available to you. And then, yeah, but yet you get these maladies that, you know, I mean, I think what you were expressing to me was that there is an evil element, but one that you don't necessarily concur with that idea that there's something evil that's really working at you.
Well, yeah, the way that I would put it is that, you know, I don't really believe in evil. I believe in the game of good and evil, which is I'm here participating in that game. I chose to come here. And sometimes because of who I am, having not encountered evil before or seen darkness before, I don't always see it. It was something that Anelia helped me to come to terms with quite a bit.
And I'm still... Benz, if you could, yeah.
Anelia Benz. It's because of her intervention, she was asked to intervene on my behalf. And so because of her, I backed out of my agreement to leave in September, and I'm staying and I'm committed to staying. But because I wasn't aware, I didn't know a person could be, you know, I guess what I would call attacked or something. So very interesting for me to have my first, you know, my first close encounter with evil. But I still haven't changed my opinion about it. Anelia and I have some good discussions about it, and she's certainly wiser than I am. But I can't get past the fact that I do not believe in evil. And I believe that...
A victim and a perpetrator either. Well, I mean, you do know however you explain that to me, about the victimization and someone being a perpetrator.
Right. Because what I say is, for myself, I'm not a victim. You know, have I been poisoned? I've been poisoned. Does it make me a victim? No, it does not make me a victim, because I don't believe in being a victim. To be a victim, you have to be in agreement with that. And what I am is a person who's playing the game, light versus dark. And, you know, I guess it's kind of, it's something that that happened to me, an experience I had, that on some level I had to have been open to and in agreement to have. It can't just happen to me randomly, and it can't happen against my wishes. And so I have a saying that I say, which is that there can be no perpetrator if there's not first a victim. So the victim, you know, the energy is the same. It's just different sides of the same coin. So you have the energy of a victim and you have the energy of a perpetrator. They play off of each other. And so for whatever reason, there was in me a part of me that still needed to have the experience of, like I did when I was being abducted, I believed myself to be the ultimate victim. And I think, like a lot of people who are going through the awakening and preparing for, and well, taking part in this ascension,
yes,
we all have...
Bit about the ascension that's coming up, isn't it the end of September and into early October, something like that? You have information about that?
It's going on. The ascension is an ongoing process, but there's energy. Yeah, there's light. There's a very high light energy coming in. It's starting right about now, and it's amping up, and it's resonates with the Schumann resonance. So if you follow that and you understand how the heartbeat of the planet goes at, 8.73 or something like that, or maybe 7.83, whatever the resonance of the planet is what we resonate at. And I guess we're resonating now somewhere around 11 or 12, so we've amped up quite a bit, but we're supposed to go to 17 by mid to late September, which is a lot in a very short time. And so it's going to create a lot of chaos. My guys, the communication I had with them recently was because I was asking them if there was going to be an evacuation of the planet, because I have heard from some friends of, I have friends who are channeling and have their own communication, and they're getting that there's going to be this evacuation of the starseeds and the volunteers and light workers and all that, which I'm all for that. I'm ready to go. That would be fine. But I asked, and I got a very strong response from Da, and it was, there will be no evacuation. And I said, oh, darn. And he said, to what purpose would that serve the higher good, Sherry? How does humanity awaken if we come in and rescue them? And I said, you true dat. So it's our ascension. It's for us to, we created this world of duality. It's for us to heal it and for us to awaken from the dream and save ourselves. You know, that's what it's always been about. So,
yes. Yes, I get that. I mean, I've been in a spiritual group for many years now called Oneness Blessing, and I love what they say, that by 2035, that they, meaning the avatars that brought this whole spiritual philosophy or organization or whatever to bear, that by 2035, we will have no more war and no more poverty. And I feel in my own mind that that could happen because we have things moving so rapidly now. So because of the internet and all of the things that they're discovering and developing and so on, and already know that they're not telling us, but also because I think that the woman's energy and the woman's way is really going to be the way of the future, and that would be no more war and no more poverty, in my opinion.
Well,
so.
it's a matter of the energy too. I mean, we are going to resonate with the energy, and the energy coming in is coming in from our creator and from our central sun, as well as other suns in this great alignment. And that energy is just lifting us up into a frequency where anything that is of darkness or of ego or of fear, it can't resonate, it can't exist there. So it's all that as well. So the world of duality is going to be going away, and I'm thinking and hoping that it's even sooner than 2035. It can happen in the blink of an eye if we,
you know, you and I both agree. Listen to Patricia Cotarobles a lot, or read a lot of her things, and where she said that we were moving to two different earths or something like that. And I don't think anything like that necessarily occurred. I mean, if it did, I didn't get on the other one, I don't think. But what do you think of that? How did you come to terms with those things? Because I really love what she has to write about. I really do. I still enjoy her letters and so on.
Well, there's any number of timelines available to us, any number of potentials available to us. And one of the things that was most interesting when I was visiting with Anelia, when she called me out there, was that she said that she's able to access all the different timelines and dimensionalities. And it's interesting because she said that one of her favorite places to visit is the timeline where planet Earth ascended in the 60s and early 70s, ascended into the fifth dimension in those years. And I said, really? And she said, yeah, there's a timeline where planet Earth went, you know, there was a split that occurred. And what happened is that, you know, there was those days in the early 60s. I was alive then. I was very young, but I remember there being that feeling of anything was possible. And there was Camelot, there was John Kennedy. It was before the assassination, before everything started to come undone.
Hey, I was there. And I also, at the age of 24, started my own business, and as a woman, you know, I mean, and that was almost unheard of, but I mean, a very substantial business for lawyers and so on. So that's a very interesting thing that you say, because I don't know how in the heck I ended up off of a farm on the 39th floor of the Embarcadero Center in downtown San Francisco with my own business then. But I just felt it was something that I just happened to me.
If you think of the way the world would have gone if Kennedy had not been assassinated, first of all, because he was just about to change the gold standard, the money to silver back, and he was going to let us know that we were not alone. He was going to do disclosure. I mean, think of how the planet would have changed. The Vietnam War would not have occurred. None of that. We would have gone down a different path. Well, on that timeline, that's the path that they went down. For whatever reason, our awareness, our attention is on this timeline. So it's interesting. Very interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So do you have any one last thing? Because we have about 4 minutes here, and I'm going to give a little call out to or shout out to Tom Doyle, who is going to allow me to use his wonderful music at the beginning and end of my radio show here in the future. I don't know that it actually came on today. And then also to express your website, which is theforgottenpromise.com. And do you have any other?
.net.
Okay, .net, sorry. And then I also can be contacted at S is in Sam, F is in Frank, number, spelled out, .com. And also at 415-433-9808 if anyone would like to sign up for a reading. Do you have any other promotion you'd like to make of yourself?
No, I think that we talked about, and I think unless you have a change of heart, I think we're planning to do this the last Monday of every month. And now that we've gotten the basics out of the way as to who you are and I am, it's kind of, and that will come out more in your other weeks. But if you want to continue to do that, I can make myself available, because I think that we have a lot of topics that we can explore. And really,
yes, we have many, many, many. We have rarely talked about the UFO things. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of other things that we can get to, because we're a like-mind, and I love that. So,
I know.
Yes,
well,
I have thoroughly enjoyed this. Wow, I hope my audience did. And I think, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, nothing. It's just, the discussion tonight was more about the basic storyline of, my experiences, or, the base, very, very basic. It didn't get into the real deeply, which is what I'm hoping that we can do when we have our conversations. So it's less about the nuts and the bolts and more about, what it all means and the higher purpose behind all of this. Mm-hmm. So forward to having those discussions and some of those other discussions that we have just on our phone conversation, Sally, where we get to talking and we can talk for 2 or 3 hours.
Okay, I know. And we still have 2 minutes here. We could usually normally fill that. We've been going for quite some time here, but I think at this point I will just say good night to the people who tuned in, and thank you very much for being online with us tonight. And you will hear more from us in the future. I hope to have Sherry on every month, as she just expressed. And so there's more to look forward to. Okay? So,
bye.